All right, everybody, and welcome back. Busy week this week for me, but that's the way I like it. Last night I had our dear friend Keith Knight on to talk about the Middle Eastern wars and kind of the human cost of all those. Tonight I have a good friend returning to the show. He wrote a wonderful Substack, and he is just an absolutely fantastic writer. I see him grinning there, but yeah, his Substack's absolutely fantastic. So I have all that stuff linked below. Make sure you go read that. I find his writing style to be just the same way that he is. And I love people who have a personality in their writing when it's not incredibly dry. And my guest today is not that way at all. So tomorrow I have my dear friend Pete Quinones is returning to the show, and we're gonna talk about the woke right and they. Which I'm very, very excited for that. It's always a good time to talk to Pete. But before we kind of cover all that stuff, I got to do my obligatory shilling. I know the Libertarian Institute is looking to raise some funds, and my guest today contributes there. So make sure you go over to there, check them out. I'm not a part of the Libertarian Institute, but once again, all those people are my dear friends, and I think they deserve much support. You become a member on my YouTube channel for $2.99 a month, and I also put the donate link through Red Circle if you want to donate to me in any way. I'm not telling you have to. I generally don't paywall stuff. I do put like live performances by Common Crown behind there, and I try to put one song from every show up on the YouTube channel, but you can see the whole shows for $2.99 a month if you so choose. Tiger Fitness through the link below. Fox & Sons Coffee. Use code Kyle at checkout to let them know that I sent you. And Deemed Fit with code SarahM25 through the link below to get yourself some wonderful clothing that supports first responders. So with all my shilling out of the way and me flossing my guest, let's get into it.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And welcoming back to the show, my dear friend, Brad Pierce. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, of course. Well, I had originally threw out to you that we should do this. I think it was actually on my birthday. It would have been November 6th. And you wanted to kind of get some commentary out before the election. And a Common Crown practice for me is normally tonight, but we're practicing Thursday. So I had a little bit of free time during this week. So, you know, here we are. So how you been? What's been going on, man?
Oh, I've been doing well. As you know, I have a baby at home, so I'm just trying to keep my writing volume up as my wife gets off of maternity leave, and you know, I deal with that. But overall, it's been good. You know, it's I usually write about a lot of international politics less than U.S. elections, but of course, the U.S. election is kind of the biggest thing going on in news in the world, and it's, you know, it's very much a clown show, as one would expect. And you know, this most recent article is about you know, the very ham-fisted attempts to reach out to men by the Democrats, which everyone knows at this point are, you know, the women's party. It's kind of, you know, of, by, and for women. And, you know, we're learning that they know very little about men. They don't even really understand men existing except as, you know, as they relate to women. And I wanted to talk to you specifically about this because I know that you cover kind of like what people would call manosphere type topics sometimes, you know, a fair amount. And it's really funny that, you know, they've definitely taken into themselves many of the worst things that they say about men. They very seriously believe these things, and they just don't know how to view men in any other way.
Yeah, and I watched the ad. I didn't watch it until like a week or two ago. It was like a big thing, I would say like 3 weeks ago. And yeah. I'm like, I cannot bring myself to watch these ads. And when I finally did, I'm like, my God, it's every bit as bad as you would imagine.
Well, and you know, I published this like a week ago now, and it's only gotten like worse and more desperate. So, you know, I featured that one, and then I featured another one where they're showing some guy on a dating show, and you know, he's like, oh, I'm 6'5", I make over 100K, and then none of them want to, you know, go on a date with him because he doesn't vote or whatever. But you know, since then they've released one that is it's like seriously shows someone masturbating you know, you can say the blanket move, and then someone shows up in his room and is like, I'm a Republican congressman, I'm going to ban porn. And then, you know, they released another one that just came out where it's like, my wife said it sounded like a Vagisil commercial, but they're like talking about, they're like, women, your vote is private. You know, it's like, you know, your husband doesn't have to know who you voted for. It's like, you people truly just hate men and marriage and women. Like, you know, you're like expanding this to being offensive to women as well. Now they have no idea how to relate to people. It's really something.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe we should start to kind of where I want to say probably this all started. And I think that's probably with the vice presidential pick. And that was with Tim Walz. And as he's tried to, you know, dub himself Coach Walz. And I think a lot of this kind of goes to, you know, they want to relate to men by picking a white man, right? Yeah. So we start there and then we put a camo hat on him because you see all these camo hats of, you know, Harris Walz 2024 all over the place. So it's already like, hey, we're trying to get outreach to more rural Americans. Like they literally look like hats. I'm pretty sure I probably have like, I literally have a camo hat sitting right here. Right. And I got a couple.
I mean, literally you're from Western Pennsylvania, right?
Southwestern Pennsylvania, a little bit north of Pittsburgh. So, I mean, I'm in a more rural area. I'm telling you, I can't go to work a single day of the week without seeing somebody sitting in our lounge waiting to get their GMC or Buick or Cadillac worked on that has a camo hat on. So, you know what kind of demographic they're going for. So, they put forth Tim Walz in a camo hat saying, this is Coach Walz here, because what are they trying to do? They're trying to outreach to, once again, men and say, hey, this guy was a coach. And he's wearing a camo hat and he's all about the Second Amendment. So we're trying to reach a little bit more to the center here by throwing Coach Walz out there, even though he's like you said in your article, he's a complete total FUD. So I know it's kind of all over the place, but go ahead, take it away from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could go back, you know, a lot farther in the shift to the Democrats becoming the party, the women's party. But yeah, it's really that, you know, they selected Kamala Harris without any sort of primary. They, you know, the Democrats have kind of developed a pathological fear of chaos within their party, of any sort of uncertainty. And, you know, that's really unhealthy, both as a political party and in your personal life. You know, like at a certain point, you sometimes have to accept the unknown if you're going to continue, you know, and grow or whatever. So they, you know, they didn't have a real primary with Biden, and then they got rid of him. And then they only had Harris, who, you know, was only picked because she's like a woman of color, as they would say. That's not a... you know, that's not a right-wing talking point. Joe Biden said that before making the announcement. She was very unpopular as vice president. You know, the Democrat partisans love being told what to do, so they went along with her, but, you know, they couldn't get other people on board. And then, yeah, they decided, we're going to go with this Midwest guy. He's apparently beloved by women who hate their fathers. You know, you saw a lot of that where they're like, oh, he's the dad that all of us who lost our dad to Donald Trump wish we had. And it's like, oh, you know, conservative women like their dads, like, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but
yeah, on that point right there, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to make it like a focal point. It kind of goes to show you the ridiculousness of a lot of our politics and the way kind of engulfs our culture today, where people would literally say that. And like, I didn't really make this connection until you literally just said it right there. And I think you mentioned it a little bit in your article, but like women who said they lost their dads to Donald Trump. It's like, you really are this invested in political stuff. Like I talk about politics all the time. And I will have heated arguments with people. I won't ever get like personal, but like we'll have heated arguments. And then guess what? Hey, right after that, hey man, let me top off your beer or something like that, right? You know, like we're just having a friendly conversation. But there's people who, you know, say I lost family members because of this political party. Come on. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just want to.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, Zay Jelani has brought this up a lot, how this is very much like a white people thing, how, you know, you look at people from like other immigrant communities or whatever, they're used to arguing about everything all the time. And they don't, you know, they don't take it personal. They would never consider, you know, like disowning a family member over this. I mean, at the same time, though, you know, in the era of 24-hour news, if someone is retired and they're at home, you know, watching any of these channels, because obviously, you know, as well as I do, CNN and MSNBC are just as brain rotting as watching Fox all day. You know, what do they have to talk about at the end of the day? You know, it's like what they have going on. So, I mean, I can see it being, you know, annoying, but, you know, it's completely out of control to talk about it that way. I mean, like my parents, you know, I disagree with them politically. I mostly just avoid talking about it. It's annoying sometimes, but you know, yeah, they're your family. It's totally crazy. You know, I actually just, I submitted an article to the Libertarian Institute about this that will probably be published tomorrow, you know, about how our campaigns are never ending now and how damaging this is for society. You know, and like, at what point we have to ask ourselves, is the activity of these campaigns more damaging to society than any benefit that having elections actually causes us? And yeah, it's like the personal has become political, and it has to do with a lot of things. A big one just is the advent of 24-hour news and, you know, trying to keep people watching all the time and, you know, bringing this up, this panic and that. And it's really something. But anyway, back to the article, what's just so crazy about it is that, you know, they very much have created this negative perception of men that they've used to, you know, get women on side. You know, they're like the party of, they go on and on about abortion. They have this false narrative that abortion policy is something that, you know, men do to women, even though male and female views on abortion are actually much closer than on any number of issues that have no obvious gender component. Women are more moderate on it. Like if you do a binary pro-choice or pro-life, men and women track about 2 points from each other is the whole difference in those views, but women are more moderate. Anyway, you know, they've set it up on that. They've just created this whole class of, you know, kind of neurotic, overeducated women. I'm now using the term like a pantsuit mafia to describe what's going on in the country of Georgia, that, you know, they're bitter, they're unhappy. They can't find good husbands, in part because they've created a society that treats men badly, where, you know, men are failing. And so many of the Democrats are just absolutely nasty about this. Like, you try to talk about these men are dying of, you know, of overdoses, they're dying of suicides, they're coming back from war and not reintegrating into society. And, you know, their attitude is like, oh, these white men, they fail as soon as something goes difficult for them. And it's like, okay, if you were less like a less hateful and nasty person, you would realize that it is really profoundly bad for any society if there's a large number of disillusioned men. Like, that's, you know, for in every way you can imagine it, you know, you have boys growing up without fathers. You also have the risk of them, you know, I don't know, becoming criminals, you know, a revolution, in any number of things. Like, it's a quick path to social failure if you have a large body of men in our country, a lot of whom have combat experience and trauma from war, that are dropping out of society like this. And, you know, even so, they can't understand why these men won't vote for them. And the only way they can sell it is, hey, when you vote, you know, think of your wife, think of your daughter, think of your mother. Well, okay, I'll give you that my mother is a liberal, but my wife, you know, is a conservative, and our concern for our daughter is that, you know, Democrats will try to trans her or manipulate her into getting an abortion. Like, that's what my daughter's causing me to think when I vote, you know. But they can't even imagine. They just only think like, oh, men are doing this because they hate women and want to control them.
Yeah, it's such a weird perspective, because like, there's even data on this where, you know, women really don't get approached that much at all. So the idea that men are out here like inserting their will into the world on two women is just like absolutely ridiculous. And one of the things that's, I think, most important for me when it comes like the whole manosphere stuff, because you know, this kind of intersects with one another, is that like, guys really aren't told to look after themselves. Like, most guys are kind of told to be like dutiful plow horses. And essentially, like, I think this is the way that like really both parties kind of look at men, is that like, they're dutiful plow horses that are just supposed to do all the work that's handed to them. And then, you know, like you said, Democrats think that, okay, well, basically, you know, white guys, as soon as something, you know, as soon as the going gets rough, then they just break down and have an issue with it. But it's like, okay, well, if you want to isolate these people and like, you know, denigrate them out of society, remember, these are like the people who are kind of maintaining everything that we do right now. Like, I'm a mechanic by trade. My stepdad's an electrician. My dad's a mechanic. Well, you know, so right there alone, you take us three out of society. Now, all of a sudden, some power lines don't go up. Your car does not go. Like, I've worked on how many, probably 10, 15 cars today, right? And then I'm also the dispatcher at my shop, so I make sure that everything in my shop is running fine. So, like, there's a lot of weight on a lot of white men's shoulders. And this is kind of like the strength of the Republican Party, and why like someone like Jordan Peterson had such an appeal, right? Is because they weren't telling men that they hate them. They were saying like, oh, no, we actually like you. And this is the appeal of Donald Trump, is that he never claimed to be a conservative. When he talks like a dude, and people like that. When you see Tim Walz do it, or, you know, he's a knucklehead or something like that, like, it's almost relatable, but at the same time, it's like you don't talk like you're weird, you're quirky, and like you don't come off like a man's man. You come off like this, you come off like Homer Simpson. And quite honestly, I think a lot of guys are sick of that portrayal of men, that like every guy is either Homer Simpson or an abuser. Like, no, there's a lot of competent, good men out there, and not all of them are Homer Simpson or abusive.
Well, this is what I keep saying about Tim Walz, is he looks and has the mannerisms and energy of the guy in a commercial that nothing's going well for. And then they like refinance his home or something. And suddenly he's like happy and switches into a suit and, you know, everything's going well. Like that's 100% the energy he has. But yeah, I mean, what you said about Jordan Peterson is really key, because, okay, so I mean, for one thing, once he left his relatively narrow specialty, he proved, you know, be an idiot about other things and, you know, totally overconfident and ridiculous. But, you know, the main thing that he was good at, besides some stuff about psychology and the universality of human experience and stories and stuff like that, was simply that, yeah, no one had ever told young men that they were valuable and that they matter. And it's like, how big of a social failure is that? And then, you know, the other funny thing is that they talk about, say, someone like Donald Trump, like, oh, well, he's just telling these men what they want to hear. And it's like, okay, what do you think democracy is? Like, how do you think elections work? Like, you figure out what the public wants to hear and you tell them what they want to hear and tell them how you're going to make things the way that they want them to be. This is what everyone does. The fact that, you know, it's this common, really, really frustrating thing about white liberals specifically, is that they think everyone else should be voting on their economic interests. So you'll always hear like, oh, why, you know, if a black person supports Republicans or whatever, why are they voting against their interests? Why, you know, except white liberals. White liberals vote benevolently for everyone else because they understand what's best for society. But everyone else, if they happen to have any, you know, ideas or ideology, you know, maybe you're, I don't know, say a black person who works in the inner city and thinks that you need more police and thinks that welfareism and environmental regulations have damaged your community. Like, those are, whether or not you agree with those political issues or think that those are the solutions to those problems, those are real things that those people deal with in their lives. They're thinking like, oh, I remember in the 70s, there were factories here, crime wasn't as bad. You know, there were more families together. And so they think, hey, you know, how do we deal with this? We reduce regulations, we bring in more cops, we whatever. It's very easy to understand why a black person might be a conservative based on the issues that they face and, you know, like having actual political views. What's less understanding is why historically, like 90% of black people vote for the Democrats. That's actually the bigger question.
Yeah, I think maybe the answer to that question is just that I can't remember who said the phrase, but it was, I'll have them voting Democrat for the next 100 years. And I really think it's just effective propaganda. But, you know, I think you might even touch on this a little bit in your article. And if not, I know it's been talked ad nauseum that, you know, Trump is starting to win a larger and larger share of the black vote. Now, people are going to take this the wrong way, but I think this is also a byproduct of Trump really kind of broadening his message, right? Because he has this whole coalition now of former left people who really, they would say they left the, or that the left left them, but they never actually left the left, so to speak. Like, they're still very left. Even Trump's a very left-leaning guy to his core. But once again, you know, if we're grading on a curve here, when you look at everybody else, it's like, okay, well, Trump is actually more like center-right than everybody else, because everybody else is so far left, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about it is that, you know, he's always been like a social liberal in the sense of, oh, you know, I don't know, being tolerant of gay people or, you know, any number of things like that. But, you know, at the same time, yeah, they went so crazy with all of that, that it was, you know, it was no longer a matter of tolerance. It was a matter of, I don't know, if
obedience,
you know,
essentially.
Yeah. It was a matter of obedience of the newest crazy thing. And then, you know, they took it way too far with, you know, like trans and kids and stuff like that. And, you know, Kamala Harris in 2024 still has she, her in her bio on Twitter. You know, like that's a thing, movement that is like long gone. Like, there's no one you're going to win over with that, but plenty of people that are going to think you're a weirdo. And, you know, so I don't know why they can't see it. It's hard for me to even imagine them not being able to see all the ways that this is unappealing to men. But it's one of those things where you create an image of, you know, of your enemy in your head, and then you've dehumanized them. And then, you know, then they're trying to appeal to the worst things about that they believe about men. So they're like, oh, basically saying, if, you know, if you aren't ideologically compliant, you know, women won't sleep with you. Like, oh, that must be the only thing that men care about, is, you know, getting dates or having sex or whatever. They, you know, try to show Tim Walz playing video games. You know, apparently the Xbox controller wasn't on, and whatever he said about football didn't make sense. they tried to show him hunting, but he's a complete FUD with his gun. And you're like, man, I hope he doesn't kill someone with this thing. And then really the peak of it all is that crazy porn commercial that, yeah, I said came out of my article. Like, why would anyone put that on TV? They're just straight. It's kind of funny too, because they talk about how, how bad Donald Trump is. Cause he's had affairs. He acts uncouth. He does all these things. Like, he's setting a bad example for the children, et cetera, et cetera. And then they, produce a video that's like, the Republicans are going to take your porn. That's what we're going with and putting on TV. It's absolute lunacy.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that they did go for a commercial about banning porn, because it's like, okay, well, first of all, like, if you actually like dig into the stats on this, like, I think it's 70% of self-identified Christians say that they have a problem with pornography.
Yeah.
So that being said, if you were to ask them probably one-on-one, or not like one-on-one, but like, in a quick passerby survey, the vast majority of them would say, hey, porn's probably not good. So who do you think you're trying to win over here? Like, there's probably like some younger Gen Z people that wouldn't be afraid to say, oh yeah, I think that's all right. It's just, I think porn is bad, but like, I don't think it should be banned or anything.
Young
like
people know how to use VPNs.
Right. Exactly. So like, this is so like 8, 10, 15 years ago, something that like you would have thought been more of a thing, but like, Trump doesn't have that kind of streak in him. And that's always been like the strange thing to me. This whole like campaign against Trump and like how they try to tie him to Project 2025, he's gone out of his way to say, I disavow that. And Trump, he's not a conservative in any, definition. He's not. So they're trying to like time to this super hardline conservative thing. But like, even a lot of the people he's appointing are conservatives. So like, what are they trying to get him on? It's not in reality at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would just say quickly that ideological politicians are really overrated. You kind of just support what I call basically finism, which is just, making things work enough that the government's not making your life too miserable. So, I'm perfectly happy with the premise of Trump not being that ideological, though he still has a way of appointing crazy ass ideologues like, Mike Pompeo or whoever. So there are still plenty of problems there. But regardless, it is crazy because they try to, attach him to this like really wonkish policy thing. It's not really any different from what the Heritage Institute has been saying since the time of Ronald Reagan, by the way. They want to act like it would transform everything. There's, and it's also my friend actually, read through it, figuring that, almost no one has. And, it's a combination of, some of the things are so common sense or normal that they wouldn't even be controversial. Some of them are such nonsense that they would obviously never be implemented. And, they're nothing to worry about anyway. And, others are somewhere in between. But like, no one actually believes Trump is a policy wonk. Like, the thing you could argue is that since he's not that interested in policy, that people who surround him are going to get in and are going to believe these things, and he's not going to be there to stop him. But that's not what they're arguing. They're arguing like, this is his agenda. This is what he believes, right? And this is what he's going to do for America. And it's like, okay, I don't doubt that he's been briefed on Project 2025 by the Heritage Foundation, because this is what running for president is. You talk to people at think tanks, they drone on at you about their policy ideas. You try to act interested so that they, will agree. So I don't doubt that Trump was briefed on this, but I doubt that he got into it, that he knew a lot about it. He's, he's kind of like a literal nuts and bolts guy. Like, you saw on Rogan, he has some deep knowledge of stuff like, how thick concrete needs to be to make a nuclear plant. But like, what he's not interested in is political theory.
I want to be a whale psychiatrist. There had only been one whale that died in the last 20 years. They put up all these windmills, and then all of a sudden all the whales, it was like 100 whales.
Well, apparently that's real. Michael Schellenberger did a whole thread about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually heard that's like legit, which I didn't know. And like,
yeah, I did. That was completely news to me. I thought it was him being kind of crazy, but I mean, once he explained it, it does make sense. They, communicate through their sonar or whatever you call it, echolocation. So you have these things clicking all the time, making all these, it totally makes sense that it would, whether or not it drives them crazy so much as makes them navigate the wrong way, it was probably maybe more accurately what it's doing. But one way or another, it's a real thing. And once again, we could just have more natural gas plants, have more oil, have more everything else. There's no reason, we need to put up all these ugly ass windmills. It's actually a dispute where I live right now. People are trying to put in a big windmill farm, and everyone's really angry about it. I'm very agnostic on the subject. My general view is that kind of economic productivity should not be stopped because people think it will, you know, mess up their view. But at the same time, I'm sure that these are heavily subsidized by the state, which by extension makes it a, you know, a matter of public interest if the public doesn't want them there. But yeah, people are up in arms about it because no one wants to see these things. It is really dystopian in many ways, you know.
Yeah. Well, so one thing that I wanted to talk about as well, because you had mentioned this in the article, I think after them kind of introducing Tim Walz as kind of like the relatable man, so to speak, they put out this ad where they had, what was it, like 8 different guys. And if I remember correctly, I think all of them were literally like gay actors or something like that.
All of them were actors, yeah.
Yeah, the one was dressed up as a mechanic. The other dude was on the side of the road with like a cowboy hat and a flannel. Yeah. The one dude was in a basketball, like in a basketball locker room. And I think there was like 1 or 2 other guys. I have a pretty shaky memory of this commercial, but let's kind of dig in on that a little bit.
So, yeah, I guess the person that made this was like a writer for Jimmy Kimmel or something. And it's part of some group that is trying to help. What are they? They don't call them interest groups anymore. They call them. Oh, it's some weird ass word that they use for minorities or whatever in, you know, Democrat speak. And you know, yeah, so I mean, it wasn't made by the Harris campaign, but they were serious, and yeah, you know, I'm sure everyone's seen it, but it's like, oh, I'm a man, I collect eggs from my chickens, you know, says this dude with huge man tits wearing a cowboy hat, and I'm voting for Kamala Harris, like I'm a man, I braid the shit out of my daughter's hair, but I'm also voting for Kamala Harris, you know, it's just crazy. And yeah, it's like they couldn't apparently find 6 normal heterosexual men to just say any normal thing. Like even if they, you know, had, I don't know, man buns and looked like total liberals or something, it at least wouldn't have been that kind of like condescending, ridiculous theater or whatever. That you, it's just, I mean, so I mean, I guess the guy, you know, is a Hollywood liberal or whatever. He probably has never spoken to a conservative in the last 20 years, at least not beyond getting food from them at the craft services table or something like that. Having one fix his plumbing, and you know, I will say it's difficult to identify when people are self-satirizing, like say someone like Nick Adams or something. You know, like it's really hard for liberals to see the humor in what he's doing. And you know, that is understandable, but like that ad was clearly seriously supposed to make someone, like make men think that it's, you know, okay to vote for Kamala Harris. And you know, it's really a lost cause to no man who needs to be appealed through masculinity is going to vote for Kamala Harris. Like the thing to do would be to just talk to them about policies, say what, you know, what you're gonna do for them. I don't know, I'm gonna stop the loss of our industrial jobs, I'm gonna promote, you know, trade schools, I'm going to increase treatment for opiate addiction, you know, I don't know, anything like that. I'm not going to send you to die in pointless wars in the Middle East. You know, maybe just try policy, but that's like the last thing that Kamala Harris is able to do.
Yeah, well, obviously that's not her specialty. And I got to say, I was a little bit disappointed that she wasn't going to go on Joe Rogan. And I can't say I'm exactly surprised, but that entire commercial, it really kind of epitomizes the way that Kamala Harris's campaigned, because I remember the one clip went viral and it was a bunch of protesters at a Kamala rally. I don't think they were saying free Palestine, but I know they were making noise because of obviously the onslaught in Gaza. Yeah. And she literally said in like the drunken stepmom cunty way that if you want Trump to win, keep doing that. Otherwise, I'm speaking. And you know,
boss.
Yeah, yeah. I do got to give Trump credit for the debate. Oh my god, I completely forgot about this. But he was like, "I'm speaking." Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's really something else. You know, it's something I think about all the time. I don't know if you remember this. Is maybe 5 years ago, I think it would have been during the 2020 campaign, Elizabeth Warren had this like Christmas message commercial where she was like supposed to be speaking to her supporters. And she's like, I'm going to get me a beer. And this woman who's a Harvard professor, that's how she said it. Then she goes gets it. And then she like sees her husband and she's basically like, hi, husband. I'm thank you for being in this house that we own together and spending Christmas with me. And it was just so weird because it's like, okay, all you had to do to pull this off was behave like a person. Like how are you failing at just behaving like a person? And Kamala Harris is the same way. Like, some small segment of, you know, Democrats find this highly relatable, but I'm telling you, this woman is, it's like, she's like your mom's friend that your mom calls your aunt who comes over to Thanksgiving at your house because she doesn't have a family of her own. And then she gets drunk on wine and corners you to tell you about how she's being passed over at work because she's a woman. Like that is Kamala Harris's energy. And I cannot believe this works on anyone.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a video of Anderson Cooper doing a shot because it's what that reminds me of, where it's like they try to be relatable, but they just absolutely fail doing it. Okay, I think I found it. And like what you're kind of speaking to there, I think is literally like the equivalent of this. Where is it? View Anderson Cooper and okay. I swear if it runs an ad.
Your access awaits.
I mean, it's literally like they're, I remember that commercial. And when you started talking about it, like right away, but yeah, like you said, your main goal was just be a regular person and you can't do that. Like you clearly could tell she doesn't drink beer or anything like that. If you have to have like a whole thing around it. It's very, very strange.
Well, and she said, get me a beer. That was how she phrased it. And she's like a Harvard professor. Like, I get that you grew up in Oklahoma, but you obviously learned to not speak like that 40 years ago or more.
Right. Come on, where is it?
Yeah, I mean, that Anderson Cooper interview was just also awful. I didn't even watch that much of it, but her inability to answer questions was something else. I do think the media is trying to come back around a little bit, having realized that you know, if no one believes them, no one watches them, that they don't have influence at all, so they kind of have right. to you know, change how much they're directly openly shaping the conversation so that they're in the conversation at all. But at the same time, how could Anderson Cooper have softballed that any more than he did, and still had it be what it was?
Yeah, and once again, you know, she literally said next question at a certain point. I can't remember what the question was, but they were going back and forth. I think it might have been something about the way Trump was asking about her identity and her sudden change of identity, and she literally said next question. Like, it's like they've really tried to hide her, but they realize, like, hiding her doesn't do her any favors. And then she does interviews and it's like, oh, we shouldn't do interviews either.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy too. Like, you know, I mean, I've talked about this before, but you know, oratory and debate and stuff like that, that's not just how you get the job of being a politician. It's an essential part of the job. You know, right. You go into Congress, you speak to world leaders, you address the UN, you have negotiations behind closed doors, you sell your policies to the public. Because this is another thing about not being very ideological, is that unless your ideas are really, really stupid, most public policies work decently if you can get the public to agree to them. You know, like that's what gets you, is that even take, it's kind of an extreme example. Take like the Nazis, for example. Like on paper, not all of their ideas are actually that bad. Right. The problem is that when people didn't want to go along with them, they responded with extreme brutality. And then, it creates this like cycle like that. So like, you know, to be a politician, you have to be able to sell people on what you're doing. You know, you should be able to address the nation, explain to them why this is.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The policy, explain to them that it's going to take some time to bear fruit because, you know, like public policy is a long-term plan in theory. And then, yeah, you have to be able to, you have to be able to speak to world leaders and everything else. And, you know, Trump is an excellent communicator, though. I mean, the Democrats claim that he's not, but like he's weird. He's idiosyncratic. He, you know, he's goes off on tangents and stuff like that. But like he's good at making people understand what he means. Even if he like makes up a random ass anecdote or statistic in the process, you know, you get his point. And, you know, this is kind of why his time at McDonald's was so successful. It's just that he's personable. He, you know, he can go speak to anyone. It's like the Theo Vaughn interview when he's like explaining to him what it's like to be on cocaine. Like you're having this conversation with like an ex-president, a 78-year-old like New York developer. Yeah. And, you know, he's just taking it totally normally, like that this guy, that that's what this guy's telling him about. You know, it's a gift for sure that, you know, they hate, but, you know, I keep thinking about something that Walter Kern said, who's like a journalist, that, you know, he said people didn't used to have Georgetown policy papers. It used to be that, you know, you just went and spoke to people and made a deal. That's how every government ran like 150 years ago, you know, but they have their brain is just consumed by, even though they're not good wonks, they don't have good policies. They're absolute midwits, but they still have this idea that, you know, that's how everything has to work, is that some academic gives you a paper. Oh, I'll listen to the science. You know, that was what Joe Biden said. And it's like, okay, the thing is, someone in public health, they know about public health. They don't know about the other costs. The art of statesmanship is you listen to all of the experts and then you try to make, you know, you try to put everything together and do the best you can with your limited resources and your understanding of what the public will go along with. And Democrats just don't think that way. That's a big thing with J.D. Vance. They kept going back to all these conversations he had a long time ago where they were like discussing ideas. And it's like, okay, you people literally don't understand that you can think something might be a good idea and also understand that it's not a viable public policy, right? Like they don't see the difference between saying like, you know, I wonder what would happen if society did this, and like trying to just recklessly implement the policy to find out what would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there definitely is a disconnect there. One thing that I think the left tries to appeal to men with is kind of like this egalitarian nature of the Democrat Party. And it's that was kind of the whole basis of that commercial. And it wasn't like an explicit thing, but it was more the undertone. Like, once again, oh, I'm not afraid to braid my daughter's hair. And, you know, oh, I know I can vote for a woman because I can think of my wife, my daughter, and all these people. But it's like, okay, well, maybe some of us don't want to vote for a woman because we know our mothers, daughters, and sisters and stuff like that. Like, I hate to say it, but sometimes you look at someone like that and, you know, I'm sure we all have females that work with us or that we know personally where we're like, okay, you're a wonderful person, you take care of yourself, but I wouldn't trust you with my car for more than 20 minutes.
I mean, and of course that's true of men as well, but you know, yeah. Of some men, but I mean, I see what you're saying, you know, but Democrats will get really, they lose their mind if you try to say anything about how, you know, a lot of people, like I was saying this about young people that, you know, maybe are voting for the first time, that, you know, people get out of school and, you know, they might have a bad impression of, you know, what you would call a school marm. They've, you know, been raised by female teachers and incompetent administrators. And, you know, that's not what they want out of a political leader. And, you know, they'll be like, oh, I'm sorry that you have such a pathetic life that you're still damaged from, you know, hating school. And it's like, okay, I appreciate that the Democrats are the party of people who miss public school because they liked being told what to do all day. But it's a real thing that by the time you've gone through 12 years of public school, you have been at the mercy of just random, incompetent, bitter, whatever, malicious women at various times that you had no power over. And for some reason, Democrats think coming off that way is, you know, what they're going to remember. I mean, that's a huge part of what sunk Hillary Clinton, besides being a well-known nasty person, is that, yeah, she just totally had that energy. Kamala Harris, less so. And she probably is consciously, you know, she's going for the fun aunt thing, but she's also like your insufferable aunt.
Yeah, that really captures it. And like, that's a lot of the way that she's campaigned. And, you know, I just don't know. Like, if you think back to 2020 and the way Tulsi Gabbard campaigned, and like, I have my problems with Tulsi Gabbard, but like, she was at least likable. Like, I don't understand why the Democrats don't have any likable women off the top of my head. At least, like, I literally can't think of one big name in the Democrats that's a woman that is actually like likable. Like, AOC is a little bit sort of there, but she's also a dipshit. So like,
where's your feel? She's like she'd be okay as your peer. She's not likable as a leader. She's like, you can imagine knowing her in real life and it being all right. I don't know if they have any likable men leaders either. They're just not, I don't know. See, this is what's crazy is that our society is so divided that we can't even imagine socially wanting to be around these people, because they live completely different lives from us in different worlds. They see things differently. They, mostly went through school without rebelling against anything. A lot of them, you know, have advanced degrees and were integrated into that. And then they got meaningless email jobs and, you know, all this other stuff. Their life has been so much more rigid than the average conservative who, more commonly say works in a trade where you have a lot of freedom during the day, who is less likely to have gone to college, who probably, got married younger. So then was making more of their, more important decisions on their own instead of, primarily working somewhere. Things are less consequential. The men work jobs with less job security, more likely to be, more likely to get injured, all this other stuff. They live. It's our society is so divided that like people that vote Democrat and people that vote Republican in many ways just live totally different lives. It's really not good for anyone. It's also not good for selecting, good politicians that might actually do something to improve our lives.
Yeah. And this is why I think people are insane when they say they want to abolish the Electoral College, because it's like, okay, well, we have so many different areas, cultures. Like if you go 45 minutes south of me to Pittsburgh, there is a whole different demographic of people than me. Like I'm a blue collar dude, right? If you heard some of the stuff that we say in my shop every single day to one another, I mean, most, people who don't have thick skin would cry.
Right? Yeah. My wife works at a bar.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure there's, some humor there too, but like, the humor there is probably gonna be different than like a blue collar shop. And plus you're means testing people in different ways and you have different, tasks to deal with.
Yeah.
You can't expect all these people to be represented by, a handful of people. You have to have somebody that's there to kind of somewhat arbitrarily decide how this, county is going to go when it comes to, when they're deciding the final vote tallies and all that. What I'm getting at though.
Yeah. Well, there are two things that you could do to make the Electoral College system more fair while still maintaining, kind of its benefits. The first of which would be to increase the size of the House of Representatives, which should have happened a long time ago because our country had like a third of the population it does now or something when they made it that number. And then it would make it more evenly distributed among the states. The other thing would be to have every state do what Maine and Nebraska does, where it's separated by, each state has two statewide votes and then it's separated by districts besides that. But see, people have done the math on that. And as much as people say, the Electoral College is so unfair, it favors the Republicans. Anything you did to make it more fair usually favors the Republicans more, actually. Like in that, if you did that, like what Maine and Nebraska do in five of the last six elections, it wouldn't have actually changed who won. It would have just made the victories more definitive mostly. But, the thing about that is that when you look at that data, you're looking at what did happen. If you were campaigning for individual districts, the spending and the campaigning and, where politicians go, where they set up their ground game, where they this and that, all of that would change. But, Democrats, they have so much hatred for like middle America. They can't even imagine trying to go and appeal to these people. They only look at it as like, oh, Lance doesn't vote. We shouldn't have to win them over if we have, the numbers concentrated in California. And it's like, okay, if you did a national popular vote, huge swaths of the country would be just absolutely completely neglected and, be of no worth to them. And so, it's a necessary system. It's also kind of funny because they think that it's so undemocratic and it's like, okay, well, in other countries that have national elections, like national popular votes, usually you have a national primary and then you get some guy that got 22% in the primary ends up going through and being the one that becomes president. So how is that any more democratic than the system that we have? It's not, but they also don't want to learn about how things work in other countries.
Yeah, and our system clearly is a disaster. But, is it like a situation of democracy is the worst system of governance except for all the other ones? Or, what can we improve upon? And it seems like there's issues, but, you know, is especially with immigration right now, you know, how do you continue to maintain the system now? Because it, like, nobody's happy. And I think you and I both know, and I kind of want to close out on our discussion around kind of like what we think we can see in the next 2 weeks. It's also sustainable to continually grow the population with people from other countries that don't have the same values or same, like, they just don't understand the culture here in America. So there needs to be some kind of change, but who knows what that looks like or what we could do. So, what do you think kind of the next 2 weeks look like? Let's say, and I think this is incredibly unlikely, but let's say Kamala Harris pulls this one out of the bag.
Well, of course, it depends how, you know, how the victory or supposed victory goes. I have to say, I don't really have an answer to it, but I've noticed some really, I feel like, subtle changes in how our kind of like highest level ruling class seems to be acting. Not in the Harris campaign that's doing increasingly stupid things that do, in fact, feel desperate. But for example, Bezos, you know, the non-endorsement and him talking about how they need to get, you know, some faith back in the media. Any number, I can't really fully describe it, but I don't know. I just think something is changing at the highest level. But the alternative to that is that they just intend to cheat regardless, so they don't have any reason to be nervous about how the campaign goes. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it definitely feels like Trump has a way higher chance of winning because a lot of people that have never voted for Trump before are this time. Either because they woke up to the media through Biden, because Kamala Harris is such an idiot, because he got shot and was courageous after getting, you know, a bullet right, you know, by into his ear or whatever, you know, right by his head, any number of things. You know, I guess the other thing that people don't talk about that much is, you remember how in 2020 everyone said that if Joe Biden was elected, COVID would suddenly be over and the Democrats would leave us alone for it? And some people were even like accepting like, oh, well, you know, if he wins, it's kind of worth it because they're going to stop doing COVID to us. And then they like doubled down on, you know, the vaccines on and all this other stuff. So I think like some people learned some things from that. You know, so any number of things, but I think if Kamala Harris has a solid victory, you know, Republicans might accept it. They might not. If she wins, it's likely to be really narrow, and we're going to hear about all these places that flooded. In my state, there's already people setting ballot drop boxes on fire. The post office failed to deliver half of the total ballots to the town next to me. They only have like 450 voters there. But yeah, they, you know, so, you know, I don't know. I do feel like we're going to hear nothing about irregularities. And either way, I think the parties are going to be really annoying. You know, if the Democrats lose, they're going to spin up another crazy web of whatever happened. But if they win, they're probably going to spend 4 years trying to prosecute, you know, Trump supporters who didn't believe in the election. So yeah, this is part of the thing that in my article that's coming out about our permanent elections is that, you know, we should at least get the 1 year break after a presidential election, but we spend that whole year suing people, prosecuting people, you know, fighting over it, going to court and then having them say there's no standing, doing this and that. It's like, it's just, it's never ending. It's absolute madness. So, I mean, I think one way or another, I think the least, and it's partially because it's the result that I'm hoping for, but the, you know, the least annoying thing for me personally is going to be if Trump wins solidly, also with the popular vote, you know, by a handy amount, and the Democrats just like shut up and regroup and finally, after all this time, try to think about what they've done wrong instead of, you know, blaming everyone else, which I think that's never going to happen. It's completely wishful thinking, but...
Yeah, since like 2008, the Democrats have really kind of moved away from any kind of concentration on middle America. They may pay lip service to it, but yeah, it's not really like a thing. And to kind of add to what you said about like 2020, about how they might wind down COVID, it's unreal. And I think this is where like the most of Biden's support came from, if I'm being completely honest with you, in 2020, is that people's lives were so torn apart and just like so screwed up by COVID that, you know, like the average person who doesn't really pay attention to this stuff is like, oh, well, Trump's president right now. My life really fucking sucks. I'm just going to vote for Biden because he's something different. And then, of course, I think, you know, the immediate backlash of, hey, vaccine mandates and, you know, hey, they're not doing anything to kind of like put down the flame here of inflation and all the disasters that happened in 2020, I think everybody's like, okay, well, now we have to go back to Trump. Like, this timeline of things continually getting worse, it's getting worse and worse at such a fast and rapid pace that people are now like, we just need to do something different at all times. And I think that was, that played to Biden's advantage. And right now, I think that's playing to Trump's advantage.
Well, and a really key thing, well, yeah, when your things are not going well, it is always bad for the incumbent. But, you know, a key thing was that it's obviously greatly Trump's fault for all of the insane COVID spending and stuff. It, you know, was a key cause of inflation. But the Biden administration also didn't take it seriously. They just told us, hey, the economy is good. You're just not smart enough to read a spreadsheet, was basically their argument.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not, I have to define recession.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit that, you know, I kind of switched careers and then had a baby and, you know, all this other stuff. So I can't actually gauge how I'm personally, how the way I'm personally doing relates to the economy, because I've had such major life changes in terms of basically having less income and more expenses. But regardless, you know, people are frustrated by how much things cost. You know, that there's a lot of things, there's a lot of things going on there, but the Democrats can't be seen to even care. They, you know, and they also want to blame Trump for all the COVID spending, all the other stuff. Oh, our country was locked down under him, all this other stuff. It's like, you supported all of that and were mad at him for not going far enough. People remember that. So, you know, I mean, that was really what I the COVID thing sunk Trump, but the thing is, like, he gave them enough rope to hang him with when he started that in the first place. You know, for some reason that's not clear to me, he claims he couldn't fire Fauci, but he could have sidelined him without firing him. When they say you can't fire someone, that means you can't stop paying them. You can, you know, you can in any number of ways tell them, hey, go sit in the basement and work on memoirs about your time in government or something. You know, like, you could have sidelined him a thousand ways. He didn't. I'm sure that basically the issue is that Trump is a fat, elderly, disease-fearing retard. And so they told him this, like, they're like, oh, hey, you know, we have this disease. You're going to get sick, whatever. And, you know, then he's also so brash and, you know, self-confident that, you know, they're like, oh, but, you know, you can be the one that fixes this. It'll be a big victory. It's kind of easy to see how they netted him into that. But what's funny is that in Fauci's memoirs, it talks about how he was like appalled that Trump had never taken a flu shot before, that Trump, you know, wasn't that scared of it when he got COVID, that, you know, it was basically all these things saying like, oh, this guy like lives his life not in that much fear of disease as opposed to, you know, being neurotically obsessed with avoiding it. And he somehow thinks that's like a bad trait in a leader. It's all really crazy. But one way or another, I think people have seen that no matter how frustrated they are with Trump starting that and not fully, you know, not really properly admitting his fault, that it was the Democrat cabal that was the ones primarily behind that, even if the buck should stop with Trump. And it's very frustrating that he won't accept the level of responsibility that he has.
Well, yeah, and to that point as well, is that he still awarded Fauci at the end of the year. And when Megyn Kelly pressed him on it, he lied about it. I mean, it's not like, you're not going to tell me that Trump forgot that he gave Anthony Fauci a reward for Operation Warp Speed. I'm sorry.
And Trump, that he said he would fire him if he won. So he said he'd fire him if he won, and then he loses and he gives him an award. It's like, dude, you could have fired him when you were a lame duck. Like,
yeah, exactly. So he lied in that interview, but in... Honestly, I think if Hillary was in the White House at that time, I think Republicans would have fucking popped the lid. I think they would have lost their fucking mind if they told him, hey, you're going to stay home. I think Trump being in the White House gave people, the right wingers, permission.
I don't think they would have done that at all if Hillary Clinton was in the White House. Like, I don't know. It's, we're going to spend the rest of our lives wondering how that was able to happen. And a big part of it was just a shit storm of a bunch of different stupid things in society. Cause it did happen, you know, across the country, but then it became across the world, but then it became led by the US. But it's the best thing I've ever been able to relate it to is, do you remember in Hurricane Katrina or whatever, like Franklin Graham or something said that this happened cause they're like homosexuals in New Orleans.
No, I don't remember that, but that's
okay. Well, some evangelical made a comment that was really controversial at the time that basically this is God punishing us for gays. And the way Democrats ultimately viewed COVID was very much the same thing, was that they thought that we had committed this great cosmic sin by electing Donald Trump. This is the most shameful thing we've ever done. Not slavery, not programs of forced sterilization, not genociding the Indians, not, you know, this is the most shameful thing we've ever done. And they were just waiting for some sort of like cosmic punishment, whether or not their, you know, even if they're atheists, like, oh, this is the punishment for having someone who doesn't believe in the science, who doesn't properly fund this program, who this and this, you know, it's America has it coming. So they just, they think that they truly on a deep-seated level believed that this was punishment for America's sin of electing him, and that it was something that we had coming, and then they just couldn't view it rationally because we had it coming because we voted the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the next question would be, what do you think happens if Donald Trump wins, which I think is like I would honestly say probably like 80-90% likelihood that he wins.
Yeah. I mean, he has a 2-1 advantage in the betting markets right now, though. He only had a 13% chance of winning in 2016. He did. So, you know, take that what you will. I honestly think that, it's going to be surprisingly normal from his part. I think that the media will thrash helplessly. He won't be, you know, worried about running again. The media seems to be kind of past their never Trump moment and realizing that, you know, they have no influence. Like, you know, all of their headlines about the MSG rally being, you know, I don't know, like the Nazis in 1938 is barely picking up with anyone. There's almost no one left for them to persuade. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. I in many ways don't think the resist libs and whatnot, as much as they're talking about Nazis and everything else, I don't think they have the energy to do all of this again, especially knowing that, you know, there's not another 4 years because of term limits, even though they want us to believe like, oh, you'll never have another election again if he gets, if he gets elected.
We're hearing that from both sides though, to be fair. We are hearing that we'll never have another election again if Kamala wins, which I think both ways is fucking retarded.
Yeah, I mean, it is ridiculous. You know, I don't know. It's I have to say, like, a lot of difficult and tumultuous things are going on in our country as it, you know, fades in power, as it has failures abroad, as any number of things. But, you know, history takes a really long time when you're living through it. Like, the last 200 years or so of the Western Roman Empire, you can read about them, and it's not even possible to understand what form of government it had or how it was running. Like, they're always splitting between people and this and that. They don't appear to obviously have control over a lot of the areas of it. They're just getting by one day at a time because of the inertia of, you know, being like the greatest empire and being like held together culturally and all of these other things. So as much as it seems like, you know, this whole mess could collapse at any time if we don't course correct, or maybe even if we do, it could go on essentially indefinitely of just being barely held together with everyone, you know, it being like 2200 and everyone's still talking about how great it was in the 1950s or something.
Yeah, it's a strange place. I think a lot of people are very optimistic for a Trump return. We had 4 years of him, and I think he's old, he's tired. I don't think that he's ready to put up the fight that everybody thinks he's going to put up. I think he's going to get in and he's going to chill out. And then some of his appointments, it's going to be like the Joe Biden presidency, except for Trump is going to be a little bit more like active. But I think mostly it's going to be his appointees that are kind of steering the ship.
Yeah. Well, you know, after the inconclusive 2020 election, because, you know, yeah, Biden won very narrowly, whether or not you want to believe that's honest, that's what he's the one that got inaugurated on, you know, narrow margins based on their numbers. But, you know, right, the congressional race was inconclusive, you know, everything else like that. I was very much of the opinion like, okay, this isn't the result I wanted, but we can assume this mixed election that we can't decide what to do. So, you know, we need to just chill out as a country and come back in 2 years to have midterms and decide what direction we want to take the country. And they didn't do that. They went straight through to, you know, oh, there was January 6th and then they're prosecuting people for that. They're talking about the end of democracy. They're trying to reform the country on a tiny margin, you know, like, when FDR was doing the New Deal and his like second term there, they got down to under 100 Republicans in Congress. That's like the amount of a mandate that he had to do the New Deal. Whether or not you agree with it, he indisputably had a mandate to reform the country in that fashion. And, you know, Joe Biden's there with like 50 senators or whatever. And, you know, like an advantage of like 7 in Congress. I'm like, oh, we're going to reform everything. You know, I want to be a really active presidency. I want this legacy. And then, you know, it all went terribly. But, no, they're so far never going to let us chill out. I hope that Donald Trump is not that active or vindictive or anything else of a president, and that he gets in and we can have something, you know, relating to normalcy. Because if you think about it, since 9/11, basically the only decent years in America really were like 2015 through 2019 or so. But the media through, you know, that whole time tried to keep us completely miserable and stressed out about Trump and investigations and all of this shit. But like, if you didn't watch the news, 2015 to 2019 were completely, everything was completely fine in America. We weren't in any major war. You know, the war only kind of impacted a narrow amount of people with family in them. The recession was over, jobs were back. There were some weird things going on in society, but you could mostly ignore them. And besides that, you know, from 9/11, really the stock or the dot-com crash, then 9/11, then the financial crash. The housing market, and then COVID, you know, so really, I would love if Trump is not, you know, that crazy during his term and tries to just chill out, focuses on, you know, kind of deregulation, lowering the number of people that work for the federal government, you know, getting some more people home from abroad. And I mean, I know he didn't do a great job at that, but, you know, he did try to withdraw from Syria. Just then the Department of Defense was like, hey, we actually just lied to him. It's fine. Don't worry. We didn't follow lawful orders to withdraw from there. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's been pointed out, you know, Kamala Harris isn't even claiming she's the peace candidate. She's not claiming there will be less war under her. She's not claiming she will end any conflict. So, like, you know, there's a million reasons not trust Trump on this. But I have to say, usually my instinct is that if someone is saying what I want to hear, that they're at least closer to what I believe or what I want to hear than the person that's not even claiming that. You look at even, like, say like Putin or I don't know, the leadership of Iran or something, like, you know, when they're describing what's going on in the world, it's like, okay, well, that's at least primarily fact-based, whether or not they're good people. Whereas what our government is saying is absolute nonsense that I know to be a lie. So like, they must be closer to a realistic position. So my hope is that, Trump gets back in and he's like, oh, I've accomplished this. I've regained my honor. Let's try to get things back on track and return to normalcy. There's a widespread desire to return to some sort of normalcy in this country after COVID and trans panic and, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. I think you may or may not get your wish. I think prices are going to keep going up. And I think people aren't ready to accept that like there is no there's no putting the inflation genie back in the bottle. So we're kind of fucked.
We'll have like austerity. That'll be the big thing everyone's upset about is Trump's not going to want to have that under his term. Yeah.
No, he's not going to want that at all. But one thing that you mentioned there that I thought was really interesting is the 2015 to 2019 period being like probably like the best time within the last probably like almost, I would say probably 20 years for Americans.
25,
And I don't think it was unique to Trump, although he benefited from
it. No, it started under Obama when the financial crisis kind of got to the end.
Exactly. Yeah, it was the quote-unquote Obama recovery. But then, you know, once Trump got elected, then, there was some deregulation. But mostly it's like, okay, well, now we're 8 years out from a recession. Now everything's back to normal. But, you know, towards the end of his term, my understanding was like a lot of the yield curves are starting to get inverted. So like it was going to recession no matter what. Like even if COVID wasn't there, we were still going to recession pretty much no matter what. But then COVID, you know, obviously was just such an unpredictable thing that, you know, it popped more than just like the financial bubble. It also popped like our public health bubble and like our public faith and institution bubble as well. And that had so many consequences. And really, like, I don't think maybe it's just like the West, but I don't think the world ever got like back on track, like customer service and like a lot of workplaces, jobs and all this stuff, like nothing, even manufacturing for like parts for GM cars never got back to normal. Like we're still kind of cattywampus in all these different areas where shit just kind of never got back to normal ever since 2020.
Yeah, I just want to ask if you've noticed something. How much TV do you watch, like TV dramas and stuff like that?
Like, do you mean like live on cable or just like streaming TV shows?
Anything like that.
I watch a decent bit. So like Stranger Things, Suits, Jack Reacher.
Okay. Well, just, I don't know if you watch like current shows, have you noticed that on TV COVID barely happened? Like they kind of reference it, but even if something is in 2020, usually it's not going on because no one wants to think about it or remember it. So you look at like the financial crisis, for example. If you watch a show from 2010, for example, everyone is talking about, oh, there's no jobs. There's, you know, we lost our house, this and that. It's in anything from the financial crisis era, every show talks about it. It's every storyline all the time. COVID people will like occasionally reference it as something that happened previously. If there's some really clear plot point for it. But besides that, it like on TV, it like really didn't happen at all, which is, I don't know. It's just very bizarre, which makes me think that they want everyone to forget about it and that it's going to be kind of easy for people to, because it was so like so stupid and unprecedented that it's going to go on. It's really, I don't think there's ever been something in society that was that significant that didn't then really work into the TV. But, you know, at the same time, they shut down a lot of the production during it. So they weren't making the shows. I don't know. I just think that's very strange. And I haven't heard anyone else talk about it.
No, I never thought about that. But you're absolutely right, because I know I've watched a ton of shows that had casting in 2020 and recorded throughout 2020. But yeah, for the most part, it was just kind of like, we're like not gonna touch.
Well, and even since then, like I was just watching a Korean show that was set in like September of 2020. It was the date in it, and there's no reference to COVID existing at all. I've seen plenty of them. I kind of at the time, I watch a lot of TV shows, was wondering, you know, how they were going to deal with this, you know, when people were going to be talking about it. And, you know, you'd start seeing when the shows picked up again, you would start seeing like a credit that was like COVID compliance person was like, would be in the credits of a show. Sometimes there was like several of them. Yeah. So like that would happen, but there was no reference to COVID existing on the actual show. It's very strange. I don't know. I just thought I would mention that because it speaks to the impact that it holds in the public mind.
Yeah. I think it's largely like something that people are like, yeah, we don't want to remember that.
Yeah,
my mom commented, when abortion is your only key point for running for president, it's questionable. Well, Kamala Harris is also running on We're Not Going Back.
Yeah, I don't know if you watch the show Lost. I can't hear that without my wife, and it's like a running joke between us is Jack on that. He keeps saying, "We have to go back." I keep posting that gif from it when she says that.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with Lost, so maybe I'll have to get familiar with it.
It's just a thing one of the guys says, but my wife and I have had that as like a joke between us for like 10 years, so I can't not think of it.
Yeah, I got you. All right, Brad, well, this has been a fun chat. This is probably my favorite one that we've done together. I think this is number 4, if I remember correctly.
I believe so.
Yeah. Either way, always a pleasure. You're always welcome back. Plug all your stuff, and we'll rock and roll on out of here.
Okay. So, the best place to find me, the easiest, is on Twitter. And I actually thought of putting my handle under my name this time. And then my Substack is thewaywardrabbler.com. If you search my name in general, I'm kind of the top person on the internet, with the name Brad Pierce now. And then I also am a regular contributor to the Libertarian Institute. I was also in the last issue of the American Conservative, though they just changed editors and it's not clear if I still have a job there. I'm also looking for new places to write, but my main writing that is, my longer articles that are really of the style that I want them to be, that, carry my voice, as Kyle was describing at the beginning, and everything else is to follow my Substack, which is thewaywardrabbler.com.
Absolutely. Well, make sure you go check that out and check out his most recent Substack on all the stuff we kind of talked about on today's show. So I thoroughly enjoyed that, and I, like I said, I always enjoy your writing style. You're very, very thorough and very, very informative, and it has your sense of humor always in it. Yes. So I appreciate that. Brad, I think we'll call her there if you don't got anything else.
No, that's great. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Of course. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Until next time, take care.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.